In the next half hour, we're going global as we explore languages. Can speaking more than one be a good exercise for our brain? And is our ability to save money purely down to the way we talk?
But before that, how does your brain turn speech, which, after all, is just a series of vibrations at different pitches and volumes, into meaning? It's the primary method of communication in pretty much every culture in the world, but we still don't totally understand how it works. I went to see one group who are investigating how patterns of syllable use come into it by putting hats on babies and playing them nursery rhymes.
So I'm Usha Goswami, and I'm director of the Centre for Neuroscience in Education at the University of Cambridge. Well, we know that there are energy patterns in the speech signal, which, of course, we're not consciously aware of hearing, but which provide acoustic landmarks for the brain so that the sets of neurons in the brain, which are basically firing electrical signals at different rhythmic rates, can synchronize themselves with those rhythmic rates in the speech signal.
So does that mean that, say, when I'm talking, neurons, cells in your brain are lighting up in the same pattern of speech that I'm actually using?
Exactly so, in a very complicated pattern, because there are lots of different speeds of rhythm in what you're saying, and the brain is tracking all of those speeds at the same time in a kind of hierarchy of rhythms, which then get bound together and you just perceive speech. You're not aware of all that hard work your brain's doing in the background.
How did we find out about this pattern of firing in the brain, and why do we think it's important in understanding speech?
This is actually very recent work, mainly with adults. I think we're the first project in the world to look at the same mechanisms in the infant brain for babies. But it became clear that without these acoustic landmarks, which are these energy changes, the brain didn't know how to synchronize with the signal. So it didn't know where the syllables were, for example. If you take these acoustic landmarks out, then you can't understand speech at all. If you put back just little click noises at the right point in the signal, then speech becomes intelligible again. So all of us will stress some syllables more than others. So words like mother, father, they have a strong first syllable. And even if you're whispering them, there'll be a stress difference or an energy difference. It's those energy patterns that the brain's interested in.
I mean, if you say mother, that already sounds really weird.
And that's something that a child with dyslexia finds it hard to hear. They don't really hear those mispronunciations of stress. But we're interested in the very beginning, the very get-go, how infant brains process those patterns of stressed and unstressed syllables.
And are these stressed syllables common across all languages?
Well, one finding motivating our project is that on average, all human languages produce 2 stressed syllables a second. So that's a kind of acoustic skeleton that the brain can use, whichever language you're born into, to begin acquiring the hierarchical rhythms that we were talking about that are in the signal when we speak. The reason it's the same across languages is because we all make speech the same way. We all have similar throats and larynxes, and so it's the way that our mouths operate that determine this twice a second beat.
So how are you looking into this exactly?
Well, we're hoping that mothers will bring their babies in from the age of 2 months so that we can listen to their brain, listen to these electrical signals taking place in response to being sung nursery rhymes.
Along came a spider and sat down beside her and frightened Miss Muffet away.
To hearing somebody saying a syllable at this twice a second rate.
Da, 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 da.
And we've also got a drum beat at that rate as a very sort of pure stimulus of this acoustic landmark theory.
So my name's Kirsten.
And who's this?
This is Lexi.
How old is Lexi?
She is 9.5 weeks.
So we collect the data by putting a sort of swimming cap of sensors onto the infant's head. And these are very like little sponges, very sensitive to any electrical activity that's happening underneath the scalp. And the computer just measures that and then measures whether that synchronizes itself with the different nursery rhymes or the different drum beats or whatever we're playing.
So you can look at the electrical patterns from the brain and see if they're synchronized on the screen with what you've been playing out to the babies.
You can see whether they're synchronised with millisecond accuracy. It's a really, really temporally accurate measurement.
You do have your nice hat. Oh, that's surprising, right? You're quite beautiful with it, you know. It suits you perfectly. Ready to do science?
Over the next few years, Usha and the team will be following up with children like Lexi to track how their language skills develop and to reveal if there is a link between how well their brain synchronised with rhythms and their growing language ability.
I think individual differences in this ability to align your brain rhythms with speech rhythms could be really important for how quickly and efficiently you acquire language.
And would it be possible, this, it seems incredible, this sort of a fundamental pattern in the brain that's across everyone. Can we use this somehow to, I don't know, learn language faster or help our memory or maybe learn different languages?
We can definitely use it to help children who have language difficulties, because different projects in my group are looking at helping children with dyslexia through learning drumming, for example, and drumming in time with speech. And also children who have overt speech and language difficulties can be helped by having a background pattern of beats that helps them with the phrasing of speech.
So could the importance of synchronising to a rhythm explain why we all love telling babies nursery rhymes?
I think there's something fundamental about metrical patterns. So poetry exploits the same thing, or Shakespeare. This patterning is very perfectly aligned when we're stressing our syllables at regular intervals. And that's what we do in nursery rhymes, which are metrical poems.
To see a fine lady upon a white horse, with rings on her fingers and bells on her toes, she shall have music wherever she goes.
Usha Goswami there from Cambridge University.